This is The Poet and the Poem. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're in Washington, D.C., and today we're featuring our poet at this convention, Pulitzer Prize winner W.D. Snodgrass. And here he is with an opening poem.
I'm sure that all the Shakespeare readers out there remember that in Othello, Iago says at one point, "Who steals my purse? Steals trash. Who filches my good name? Takes that which not enriches him and makes me poor indeed." Well, of course, the irony of that is that he's one of the greatest villains ever created in literature. And he's at the moment, he's right in the business of ruining Cassio and Othello, both of them his superiors in every way. Well, this is a poem entitled, "Who Steals My Good Name?" Well, if you have a name like Snodgrass, especially if you have a name like DeWitt Snodgrass, you feel a little like Henny Youngman, you know, who was always saying, "Now take my wife, please. I say, now take my name, please. Take it in vain. Take it away. Just take it. Well, four wives in a row have taken my name. Three were very happy to give it back. I also have a stepdaughter who took my name. And, of course, the first day she did that and went to school, she had changed her mind by the time she came back. I don't blame her one bit. This is a poem about someone who took my name while we were down in Mexico. We winter in Mexico. And while we were down there, somebody got my name and the numbers of my debit card from a hotel. They make up a card for themselves. That man or woman spent $11,000 in 5 days. This is a poem addressed to that person. "Who steals my good name? For that person who obtained my debit card number and spent $11,000 in 5 days. My pale stepdaughter, just off the school bus, scowled. Well, that's the last time I say my name, Snodgrass. Just so, may that anonymous Mexican male who prodigally claims my clan lines, identity, and the 16 digits that unlock my bank account think twice. That less than proper name's been taken by three ex-wives, each for an amount past all you have squandered, each more than pleased to change it back. That surname you affect may have more consequences than getting teased by dumb kids or tracked down by bank detectives. Don't underrate its history. One of ours played piano for his prison's weekly broadcast. One got rich on a scammed quiz show. One made a bungle costing the World Series. My own past could subject you to guilt by association. Should you write anything more than false checks, abandon all hope of large press publication or prizes. Critics shun that name like sex without a condom. Whoever steals my purse helps chain me to my writing desk again for fun and profit. So take thanks with my curse. May your pen name help send you to your pen."
The voice of W.D. Snodgrass. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're in Washington, and Snodgrass is featured here as our star poet. I have watched his career and read his work since the 50s, and Heart's Needle is, I guess, the book that made me start loving poetry, 1959. That work is still, I think, right at the top of American literature. Is that reissued?
Not now. It's out of print right now.
That is unforgivable. Now, what shall we do about that? I mean, there's no reason for that to be out of print. We have enough paper.
Yes. Maybe not enough patience. I don't know. I'm going about the business of getting a new volume, but
right.
But it's sort of up in the air right now.
And if I were to read your work, we would be here very late tonight. But there are about 20 books that I have titles to. I'll just name a few every time there's a lull in the conversation. Heart's Needle, 1959.
Yeah.
After Experience, Poems and Translations, 1968. Remains, 1970. The Fuhrer Bunker, which was started as a cycle of poems in 77, was put on at the American Place Theater, which I remember, and became a play as well. A great, courageous work that is controversial, but still a brilliant and lasting work of literature.
Oh, thank you.
Progress, 1977. If Birds Build With Your Hair, 1979. And These Trees Stand, 1981. And I'll continue this list of credits after we hear many more poems, because the work spans 50 years. I believe that I'm talking to the great American poet. And my name is Grace Cavalieri.
I sure would like to have a tape recording of your just having said that.
Maybe it's because you came along with what I loved. Maybe you came at the time I started loving poetry. Let's hear another poem.
Sure. I'm going to read mostly very recent things. My wife and I live out in the woods back of Syracuse, New York, and our neighbors out there are all farm people mostly, and so we get to know them and their children and so forth. There's a poem called Farm Kids, whom we like very much. For one thing, they learn how to do everything, but also there's a kind of cheerful quality about them. I mean, the farmers in upstate New York are in terrible situations, and nonetheless, the kids who have nothing are just wonderfully cheerful. They're courteous. They're helpful. They speak to you nicely, unlike, for instance, our university's friends' children, who are hard to get along with, who have everything and demand more than everything. Hmm. So we come to be very fond of these children, but they're children who have very little in the way of a future, I must say. We were particularly taken by a young girl who, she looked like a Raggedy Ann doll. You remember those dolls?
I do. Yeah. I had one.
Oh, yes. All right. Well, think of her. This little girl looked just like that. And this is a poem about them and her in particular, and it's called Farm Kids. Hmm. Our neighbors, slim, ragged doll of a daughter. Not, we're told, of his own getting. Breathed out, "You've got so many cookbooks." Each eye a startled, "Oh," as it skimmed our kitchen shelves. And so much food. Later, straight-faced, she said her mother lives now with her new boyfriend in another county. Hard up for farm jobs, her dad has to drive 60 miles to the factory, getting up at 5 a.m. to leave them where his folks watch after them until he gets back home. Sometimes 5 p.m. We go for long walks every evening. If we pass their trailer, they all tumble out shouting, "Snodgrass! Snodgrass!" The slim, straight-faced one is thought slow by her teachers. There's much she'd do well not to know. The cool offspring of our city friends are driven to special schools, sports dates, parties, given phones, computers, cars, the insatiate stuff that will guarantee they can't ever get enough. Mm. Our neighbors, less keen hungers and kinder drives, make sure they'll make nothing of their lives but lives.
The voice of W.D. Snodgrass. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're in Washington, recording live. The one thing I believe is a signature of your work is that you are able to create character. And I've always felt that about the people you create are unforgettable. I will always now know that little ragdoll girl. And there is a theatrical element about your work. So you just told me off mic that you performed in a play in Mexico. There is a tremendous ham inside of that poet. I mean, you are a theater person.
Well, I love theater, and every summer we go to different poetry or play festival, drama festivals, and so forth and so on. But most of my life, I've not been very good very good on stage. I think I got better at reading poems earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But then I noticed also that. Though I could, when I was telling you about getting to play Sir Toby Belch in Twelfth Night, but any of the people there who do much more acting than I do can steal the stage from me.
But it is more your ability to create character and situation and plot in a narrative poem.
Yeah, and I tend to do more with my voice probably than they do. But they know how to handle themselves on stage better.
There are two parts. The poet is rather a reticent person, wouldn't you say? But the playwright or the person who reads theater is a show-off. There has to be two parts to the personality. Mm. Or do you consider it all from the voice?
I'm a pretty show-off.
Oh, okay.
I do an awful lot of reading.
Some of his other books. We were talking about all 20 of his titles, and we have Heinrich Himmler in 1982, The Boy Made of Meat in 83, Magda Goebbels in 83, two in 1 year, D.D. Bird Callying Jenny Wren. You have a lot of birds. A Locked House in 86, the Kinder Capers?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know if it was the kinder, more merciful capers. In 86, Selected Poems, and they were poems from 57 to 87.
Yeah.
And W.D.'s Midnight Carnival, The Death of Cock Robin, I remember
both
that.
Both of those were done in collaboration with a painter, Delos McGraw.
They are works of art. Each in His Season, 93, The Fuhrer Bunker, The Complete Cycle, 95, and prose and translations and essays. So before we hear the next poem, would you be willing to try to remember how your work has changed in 50 years? Can you look at it and say, I was this and now I'm that, or not? Is that
possible? No, I don't think so. Okay. I mean, I always try to... I don't want to repeat the things you've already done. You know, for instance, the reason you do translations is because it's impossible. That makes it worth trying to do. So you don't feel real bad if you fail. You didn't think you could do it anyway. And if you just keep on doing the same stuff over and over, you try to take on more new problems. I'm getting pretty old now to find anything new. I keep trying. But it does.
So you
I'm
feel that your career really reflects change and metamorphosis.
But I suspect a critic could tell you more about what the differences were than I could.
Yes.
But I find now that I will be doing a poem and find, oh, here, I can do this there and now. Oh, I've never done that. And then I will look back at an old poem for some reason and think, oh, there it was. I had already done that 5 or 25 or 105 years ago.
But how interesting that you're conscious of that, of wishing innovation at
all
times.
Oh, yeah, sure. Always, yeah.
Well, let's hear another.
All right. Those farm kids that I was talking about earlier, you know, grow up, and then often when they become adults, we will hire them to work for us.
Mm-hmm.
And we live in an old farmhouse out in the woods there, and it's the kind of house that, you know, you don't just try to keep the flies out. You try to keep the groundhogs out. If you go to make a little repair someplace, a little cosmetic fixing up in the corner, you end up putting in a main beam or something. You know, major things have to be done all the time. Well, if you take down a wall in a house like this, you find the most amazing things in the walls. For instance, if there's room, it's a barn type of building, big vertical planks with just something plastered over it. You take down that plastering, and there may be spaces between the planks.
Hmm.
Well, in there you'll have at least a foot deep of dead flies and other things. I mean, probably dead small animals. If you take down a ceiling, you'd be surprised what can come down onto your heads. And we did have some people do that recently, and they were astonished by what came down on their heads. In any case, you never know what's going to come out of your ceiling. This is called On High. As the day laborers in our loft pried loose the hand-split, slivery lath, the gray, unpainted plaster, it all came cascading onto their bent heads like Yahweh's judgments or Zeus's showers on the naked Danae. Dead flies, snake skins, bat scat, a boy's clodhopper, the Christian Messenger for 1902, sex magazines, a gnarled cane, then a cat's carcass, a tattered fur sack flapped around the bones and fanged skull, all fat and tissues gone. Heavy, heavy, what hung over long years, like an angel's perch or sniper's blind, bare inches from our heads, prowled, say, into some dark cranny, snarled tight, the dead flesh nibbled off by mice, its past prey, or battered by some farm child, sparing his rough parents, buried where no one could know. No, a tramp cat crept in out of wetted winds, snow-clotted woods, then frozen in this shelter. It, too, one part of our insulation. The workman, smirking, must have wedged it back in overhead. Their detector and watch cat for cold forces, for hungers that go along with us. Thou cast off cat of catastrophes, Calvary's scape cat, lar and caretaker spokescat, oh, be kind. Sealed into our new ceilings, 2x4s and plywood, to which we do not lift our eyes.
Oh, that is beautiful. It is Shakespearean.
Yeah.
And you always sort of turn in a little nursery rhyme or a phrase or a jingle or a mythological allusion. There's a lot of veils in your apparently accessible work. Many little tricks of the trade are in those lines.
Well, I've been at it for 50 years,
yes.
So
and you love
pick up something.
You love the difficult.
Oh, yeah, sure. Well, you want to take on a big opponent. If you get beat up by a small man, I mean, that's still like a loss.
What a good way to put it. Do you feel that you're of a school or you're you?
Well,
I don't know anyone quite like you.
Bless you.
I don't feel, I mean, it's an American grain, but if you were to look at Mark Strand and you look at our giants in literature and Pinsky, and I would say that your work is inimitable.
Well, thank you. I would want to be that way, but people are always putting you into categories. For instance, they called my work confessional, which I did not like at all.
But it's not true.
Thank you.
Because although you might start with the eye, you are looking at things. You're not just taking the interior
road. I hope
so.
First of all, it confessional sounds like it's somebody's bedroom memoirs, and I'm not interested in bedroom memoirs, or it sounds like something religious, and I am not.
Who? But just one person said that, not many.
Oh, no, lots of people.
Well,
oh,
that
yes.
is, I'll have to refute that publicly.
Thank you, please.
Is there any magazine who reviews a W.D. Snodgrass poem?
Oh, I don't know. I don't get reviewed very much these days.
But do you get published very much? I mean, I've seen in the American Poetry Review recently.
Yes.
And there's
Atlantic Poetry. Yeah, sure.
The good magazines would not ever turn you away.
Well, as a matter of fact, my career seems to be coming back. Now that I don't need it so much. I'm retired.
Just in time. Your career is coming back, actually.
I guess so. All right.
You were a professor emeritus from Delaware.
Yes.
And then you wrote full-time.
Yeah. You know what Oscar Kokoschka said? the painter, a kind of a scandalous man, said, "If you live long enough, you will see your career die and be born again three times. But the young girls are always there."
Well, which one are you on? One, two, or three?
I don't need any young girls. I'm with my fourth wife.
And a lovely person.
I'm with my last wife also.
And Kathy is the good one.
Oh, yeah. She'll do. She can stay.
I'm Grace Cavalieri, and we are honored that W.D. Snodgrass has come to this convention to show the world how to do it and how to be, I guess, himself. And that is the greatest gift a poet can give, how to be like no one else in the world and to do it well in the line. So we'll hear some more of those lines now.
All right, this is a curse. And I should tell you, we were just speaking about my wife a moment ago. She plays piano, organ, and harpsichord. Hmm. And down in Mexico, when we go down there, what we've taken with us down there is an electronic keyboard. And, of course, that allows her to practice and so forth, but it isn't at all like having a live instrument. The keys don't respond in the same way. The voice isn't the same. There's a real difference. And we wanted a harpsichord to take down there. And I knew a man who did make harpsichords, and we went and talked to him. And we came to a kind of agreement about how long the harpsichord would be, so it would go into our car, what the price would be. And then I gave him a lot of materials to use for this. There was a wonderful apple tree that had been cut down, that I cut down in our orchard, and it gave beautiful, dark-toned, lovely wood. And I'd saved that for 10 or 12 years, seasoning, and so I gave him a bunch of that to use in making the instrument. We did things like going out and buying old pianos at auctions and then soaking the ivory off the keys. You can't get ivory for piano keys now. And, of course, you want ivory. So, anyway, we gave him all these things, but we said to him, "We leave for Mexico on such and such a date. If it isn't ready by then, if you can't have it ready by then, don't start." He says, "It'll be ready. Don't you worry about it. It'll be there." Well, you know what that meant. So when we went to get it, it wasn't ready. And a couple years passed and it wasn't finished. And I got a lawyer after him. And finally, my lawyer said to me, "Look, are you sure you want an instrument made under duress?" Okay, common sense comes into the thing. And we decided, okay, I'm going to at least have, if I don't get an instrument, I'm going to get a poem out of this. So I wrote a curse about this person, and I changed his initials. It says, "It is a curse against A.H. Oh, and I should break in and tell you one thing. The term virginals comes up in this poem. Now, it has nothing to do with sex. And it has nothing to do with people who have nothing to do with sex. It has to do with a kind of harpsichord where the strings don't go straight forward ahead of you as you're sitting down to play it. They come across your lap. It's a kind of side saddle harpsichord. Anyway, here's the curse. You drove off with the apple wood from that great bounteous tree that stood lightning battered and storm tortured, half a century in our orchard, and whose trunk, 20 feet tall, grew hard, dark toned, and 2 feet through. Then, seasoning for 10 years had lain waiting a purpose worth its grain. You took besides our walnut, spruce, and cherry boards for your own use, and warm ivory we'd soaked loose from piano keys. Grave as a goose, you gave your promise to produce an instrument, made an excuse instead, then, sure as self-abuse, one more excuse, one more, one yet, till we both knew that's all we'd get. Now, if you sell that harpsichord, may the straight-grained spruce of its soundboard, warping and twisting, wrench apart, so irritable buzzing start to breed inside that lengthening crack, and pins slip. Not enough to slack strings, though the true pitch won't quite hold. There, where you signed your name in gold, may random checking split and etch it straight through the words A.H. May Fetch It. Or if you keep it as your own, may it ring with a strong, clean tone at times. But when in public, may Jack swell and jam so that you play garbles of chord and melodies gapped like decaying teeth or cheese. May felts fail so every error lingers long in the ear. And may your fingers slip off the ivory, slick as wax, so you play always in the cracks between keys that go limp or stick, tearing your nail down to the quick. May all you set your hand to buckle, breaking your finger at the knuckle, which aging, aching, goes rheumatic, turns your recorder holes asthmatic, your fiddle feeble, and your squeeze box troubled by a sleazy wheeze. May your drum rhythms stumble and alter, so that the dancers halt, start, falter. And when you lift your voice, may it wobble, as if you had told things not quite probable. May far-flung audiences recognize just what you are. And may the wise try your virginals, guess at their price, look long, but think best not to ask it, seeing its form so like a casket he could go to the boneyard in it before you'd finish him his spinet. Still, may no formal punishment ease your guilt. May each day be spent evading lawyers' calls or tax inspectors, falling shy on facts, on good faith, or harmonic rules. Be fearless around power tools. Should you pick up some stranger's kit or fine wood, switch on your drill bit. If you should skirt around a law, look up once from your bandsaw. If you should ever break your faith, may loose hairs wander toward your lathe. Lastly, may those you trust in break their word and for their own sweet sake waste your gifts on things to make them comfy till the day you die. Every midnight may you lie awake with one who'll scorn and rule you for a coward and a fool. That is, I hope you spend your life alone, or better, with your wife.
The voice of W.D. Snodgrass. I was just noting the interior rhyme, the sound, the rhythm, the cadence, the way each line is begun a different way. That is an absolute high watermark.